Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
During the week, French dance duo Daft Punk, they announced they were splitting up. And how did they do it? They released a video simply titled Epilogue. It shows one of the robots blowing up and marks the end of their 28-year career together. That's really it. And we had to get other people who are around them and from the record company to tell us exactly what was going on. And even then, question mark over your head. Anyway, with their last album, Random Access Memories, winning 5 Grammy Awards, including Best Album, it's fair to say that the lads were still in pretty good shape when they called it a day. But not all groups end on such a high, and that's what I want to look at here, because from reunion tours to half-baked album releases, we see so many bands who keep clinging on when they really just should let it go. Well, journalist Brian Boyd is on the line now to chat about some groups that called it a day when they were still at their best, and no doubt he might mention a few who aren't and weren't. Come on, Brian, are you all right?
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good indeed. Now, listen, give us, first of all, an insight into the career of Daft Punk and just how important and influential they were on the dance music scene and beyond.
Hugely so, Dave. I mean, they were so enigmatic, weren't they? And they pioneered a new form of dance music, and they brought it into the mainstream. And they also did great collaborations. I'm just thinking of the work they did with The Weeknd, which was magnificent stuff. But there was, I mean, when they broke up this week, it was typically enigmatic. And they've never, there's two guys, Guy and Thomas, they've never actually, there's rumours that, you know, when Daft Punk play, it isn't really Daft Punk because they have the helmets on and no one knows they're there and stuff. But it was a typically enigmatic way to go out. But the strange thing about it is I can only think of two bands in popular two mega bands in popular music history that have broken up with such
one.
Well, the other one is REM. I was going to get
no,
there.
No, I was going to say REM.
REM.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that, like, or you're saying because these guys? Well, I would say these guys aren't a band. But anyway, okay, go on.
When bands break up, it's usually solicitor's letters. It's usually bitter personal finger pointing in the press, recriminations, and I'll never work with you again, and I hate your guts, and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Daft Punk and REM are the only bands who've actually said farewell with love and kisses, and said, in both bands have had stellar careers, have had wonderful careers, and I think Daft Punk, they've been going 28 years, Dave.
Yeah, but it's not just even that. Like, it was way into their career they come up with something like this.
We've come too far to give up who we are. So let's raise the bar and our cups to the stars. She's up all night to the sun. I'm up all night to get some. She's up all night for good fun. I'm up all night to get lucky.
Yeah, that's probably 7 or 8 years old, but it feels like it's about 2 years old. But I mean, that was a whole new chapter again, that whole Random Access Memories and Grammys all over the place.
So it was. I mean, they were sort of the talking heads, really. They were sort of a contemporary talking heads in that they always surprised you what they were doing. They always moved on to new territory, and they always... But they will remain blissfully enigmatic, and that video that no one really understood. There was an 8-minute video.
Was a good time for these robots to call it quits? The split was friendly, wasn't it?
Very friendly. It was like the REM split in 2011, where it was all love and kisses and I love you and you love me and we've had a great career and let's leave it there. And there's cynically, you could say we can book them in for a Coachella headline slot in 2025, but I doubt it. I don't think so. I think these guys are strange. It's a very double-edged sword, because you remember LCD Sound System broke up with great fanfare, and they had these gigs in Madison Square Gardens. And it was all, oh, we're breaking up, come see the gig. And a lot of people paid a lot of money to fly to New York and go to the gig. And then 5 years later, what do we have? Hi, it's LCD Sound System. LCD Sound System, we're back again. And that really annoyed people.
Yeah, we thought the movie was going to be the end of it. By the way, also, just tell us about Daft Punk. I mean, these guys are enigmatic, let's say. They're not well known as who they are they?
Deliberately so, yeah. I think that was the whole thing from the beginning. Again, you have these sort of studio boffin types. They're brilliant in the studio. They're not good on the stage. So really, they were the background guys. They borrowed something from the Pet Shop Boys in a sense, in that they were just like, you know, studio Boffins and didn't really, well, certainly half of Pet Shop Boys, they never really made a deal about themselves. And their best work was always done with people like The Weeknd or like Pharrell Williams, who are show people, natural show people. So it's a perfect collaboration. They're the guys with doing all the brainy stuff with the music in the background, and they bring in Pharrell Williams at The Weeknd and they confront a show and make it fabulous.
And many of the bands that are big and huge and broke up with such acrimony, it's kind of frightening in some ways, isn't it?
the best one is the Eagles. When they broke up the first time in 1980, it got so bad. I mean, and the Eagles were, as you know, at the time in 1980, this was post Hotel California. They were probably the biggest band in the world. Mm. Things got so bad in their last few live shows that their sound engineer had to turn down their microphones between songs because band members were threatening physical violence to each other.
Well, I can beat that. A friend of mine was working on the stage in Dublin when they came back for that. I think it was for that, you know, Hell
Freezes Over.
Yeah, with the tickets at about 5 million quid a ticket kind of thing. And he was doing the stage, and one of the gigs he had to do was put white gaffer tape in 5 different places across the stage, because if one member went over that line, or even the machine head of his guitar went over that line, then there was all sorts of, you know, legal writs and everything going on.
Two things on that. It's funny you mentioned the ticket price, because this is actually very important. So the Eagles broke up in 1980, hating each other's guts. It was really, really bad. When they reformed in 1994, they were the first band to charge over $100 a ticket for the live show. And that was a really significant moment. Now, like, you know, if you see Rolling Stones, whatever, you can pay up to 180 euro or dollars a ticket, but the Eagles going over $100, that was a very significant thing for the live touring circuit. The second thing, when you mentioned the gaffer tape, when they did reform, the all 5 members in back in 94, all 5 members had their individual lawyers with them, and at every single gig there was huge rows backstage over not the set list or not the encore, over the lawyers arguing over which member of the Eagles should walk out onto stage first.
I see. I thought you were going to say the brown M&Ms or something. You were going down that far. Mm. Okay, tell me about just one or two more. I mean, like, I know, like, the Police, obviously, like, there's the documentaries where you see Stuart Copeland fighting with Sting and all the rest of it. But, like, they did come back for a money tour, didn't they?
They did. And you have to remember about the Police. The Police were Stuart Copeland's band originally.
Yeah.
And Sting came in. Now, the reason the tensions in that band were so bad is because they suddenly realised that Sting was the gifted songwriter. And as Sting himself said, it's a very difficult job to have in a band when you have to tell the two other band members, when they approach you with songs, that their songs simply aren't good enough. And there's talk about the what Stuart Copeland used to write on his drums. Basically, he wrote, Sting is a...
Yeah, that's
this
right.
Word starts with C and ends with T. We can't say it at this time
right,
of day.
Okay.
And that was bad. Yeah, is it for the money, though? I mean, there's always this thing about bands always come back and go, oh, we will unfinished business. Actually, it is for the money. There's a great story about Manny from the Stone Roses when the Stone Roses reformed, and they were awful. I mean, that was...
Yeah, I saw them in Phoenix Park. They were pretty dreadful, all right. Ian Brown actually is. Anyway.
Yeah, and there are a few bands who really shouldn't have reformed, but Manny going out to get some bread and milk and went to the cash point to take out 10 English pounds and saw that his balance was 3 million and 10 pounds. Because the promoters had paid him overnight.
Yeah, right. Okay. The thing about the Police was, though, like, it was a ruthless kind of thing. They said, okay, 15 months or 18 months, we won't really do any press. We'll just go out, we'll do huge gigs, we'll make a fortune. And somebody said they made about 200 million. Sting gets at least 120 of that. The other two get the 40 between them or whatever. And that was the way it was done. It was like a raid by night. It just suddenly happened, then suddenly didn't happen. They played one of those gigs here, didn't they? That was the Phoenix Park or something.
They did, and it was. I mean, the thing about these sort of things, it's incredibly cynical, because you realise that the band are just going through contractual obligations.
Oh, yeah.
You realise the set list is the greatest hits. There's no attempt to sort of vary from that or to make it into a show. It's just, we're going to play the songs that you know. But a lot of this goes back to ABBA, who were the original sort of reform band. And I was astonished once. I interviewed Bjorn from the band, and he told me that the... the offers to reform the band came in, like, they started 2 weeks after the band broke up, which was basically at the end of the 70s. And it got so bad that Bjorn actually said to me that the offers, there was this big thing where ABBA became very cool again in the 90s. And then the money they were offered to reform and do a world tour, Bjorn said it became so bad that whenever he felt that whenever he was turning down an offer, the promoters would come back and top that offer. They thought he was holding out for more money. It got to the stage where a private equity firm offered ABBA in 2001 $1 billion for 100 shows.
Okay, so they could do 100 shows in a year, right?
They could do 100 shows in 9 months. Now, Bjorn told me that the reason that the offer was so huge that the four members of ABBA, for the first time since 1979, sat down in a room together and discussed it. And the reason they were going to do it was this, because, I mean, they're all incredibly wealthy in their own right. The reason they were going to do it was they could build a hospital in Stockholm.
Yeah.
And they thought that would be a fantastic legacy. But then when you read the small print, Bjorn was saying, OK, the top part of the contract was 100 shows. That could be knocked off in 9 months. Also, DVD, live DVD, DVD extras. We're going to need to reboot the Greatest Hits album, but you need to write three new songs so that people buy it all over again. Then, by the way, can you swing down to Australia? And then can we do South America? What theoretically was 9 months ended up being 3.5 years.
Yeah, I'm sure they could have negotiated a few of those things out of the contract though as well if they really didn't like it. You know, like, I mean, like, it's
Dave, for $1 billion, you want some bang for your buck.
Absolutely. Also, like, I mean, if you think about it, it's ABBA, Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd surely are the billion-dollar bands, are they?
There's a list. So every year, music promoters have this list and they're looking, because now, as we've talked about before, the music industry is predicated on revenues from touring. Mm. And really, you're looking for the huge names. I remember talking about people who could fill out, who could sell out Slane Castle. Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, Oasis, The Smiths are at the top of that list. Second tier would be Talking Heads, White Stripes, The Fugees. There's no chance of Pink Floyd or Led Zeppelin because really it's got to the stage there where if it was going to happen, it would have happened in their 60s. They're now in their 70s, going into their 80s. Oasis are the band that everyone's looking at now. And I mean, if you remember, like, they broke up in Paris, I think Liam swung an acoustic guitar at Noel.
Yeah, that was 12 years ago now.
That was 2009. Yeah. Now they vowed that they would never play together again. They actually, worse than that, they vowed they would never speak to each other again, which they haven't actually. They've been good to the word.
I hear there's been a few little, like, I mean, Glastonbury 2022. Anybody? No.
Yeah, well, that's my But
and then a world tour of the other 99 dates after that. I mean, they could clean up, you know. I mean, like,
well, this is the whole thing. You can't just reform for a Glastonbury. The Smiths were offered for one Coachella. Now, Coachella, in case anyone doesn't know, it's the US equivalent to Glastonbury, but far better. It is the best music festival in the world. It's held in California every March. Hasn't been on the last year, won't be on this year because of the pandemic. The Smiths were offered $5 million for one Coachella headlining slot.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a lot of money. Now, it's not just that, as you were saying, the Smiths are not going to reform and play Coachella. If the Smiths reformed, they would play Coachella and then they would go around the world and they'd make £500 million each. It's not just the $5 million. Coachella said to Morrissey that they would make the whole festival, which is a massive, it's a huge Glastonbury, bigger, 10 times bigger than Electric Picnic, they would make the whole festival vegan.
Yeah, okay. I heard about that, all right. Yeah, that they'll do anything to get them. Although I wouldn't have put the Smiths in with the same Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd in terms of a world domination thing. But anyway,
and I think that there's a generation now coming up.
Yeah.
I mean, the Smiths sell. They sell every year. There's a generation. The people who would go to see them are, unlike me and you, the people who never saw them the first time around because they weren't born.
Yeah. I mean, like, the Beatles, like, they probably, did they do the best thing of all? Because they broke up so acrimoniously. They do one gig, the greatest gig in history, on a roof of Apple, and that's it, gone forever.
Yeah, I think they did regret that also. But you have to remember that the Beatles broke up as a live band in 66?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate to say it was August 29th, 1966 in Candlestick Park in San Francisco.
Candlestick Park, that's it, yeah. So
By the way, so can I just say one thing about Led Zeppelin, which is a really funny one in some ways, because Led Zeppelin came back for one gig, as you know, in 2007.
Yeah.
And there were 22 million people applied for tickets, and they only get fit 20,000, because it was in London in the O2 Arena. And,
yep,
there was all these planes ready to go on all tarmacs from all over the States to see Led Zeppelin, because just in case they only did one gig. And as it turned out, they did only do one gig. But the really weird thing about it, and they'd broken up many years before that, but the really weird thing about it is, you ready for this? In 2 weeks' time, it's 50 years since they played their gig in Dublin. On the 18th of March 71 at the National Stadium. How about that? Okay, look,
that's
what
incredible.
About bands that broke up and then got a very lucrative offer for just this one tour, like The Police, but then it all spirals into a full-blown comeback with new albums and all the rest, which it didn't do with The Police? What about that one?
Well, it doesn't happen. I mean, if you look at the history of this, if you look at bands like legendary bands like Velvet Underground and The Pixies, they all came back. They tried to release new material. The Stone Roses offered up some new EP, which was absolutely rubbish. The Pixies didn't. Basically, if you're going to see Velvet Underground and the Pixies, you want the first two or three albums. You don't want any of the new stuff. The whole point of, you know, we're creative again. Bands only reform for one reason, and that really is the money. And if they say otherwise, it's funny how these bands, when they reform, ostensibly for the love of the music, they never play the Olympia. It's always going to be Three Arena, or it's always going to be it's always going to be a festival.
It amazes me that ABBA would needed to have had some new music, because a thousand of these. All they have to do is churn out that stuff. Who needs new stuff from them if they're
back? The worst thing you can hear when you've paid over €100 to go and see a legendary band reform is, and now for some new material. No yeah, one's interested.
We're going to start off with our new album, every track. Here, look, I'll tell you what. This is a different one. Look, hold on. Thing is, from the first album, second, third, fourth, they just kept getting better and better until they didn't. And then they broke up acrimoniously. I'm talking here about Talking Heads. Now, David Byrne played Three Arena in the last few years, and it was one of the greatest shows of all time and very different. And now it's out as a movie, you can see it, and it's American Utopia. It's incredible. But one thing that people don't necessarily see with the David Byrne thing is a lot of his music in the last few years, the songs aren't great. They're not as good.
No,
as
they're not.
They're not as
they're
good
not.
As Talking Heads, I can tell you,
There's a band out there who are selling out the Aviva. Guess who this band are as soon as you can. They haven't written a good song since 1978.
Gosh, I don't know. There's a bunch of them out there. Who's selling out the Aviva these days?
The Rolling Stones.
All right, yeah, okay.
And that's a perfect indictment of a band. Their set list is from the 1960s.
Yeah.
Now, there's another argument here, which is my pet theory, which is bands only write brilliant music in their 20s.
Well,
take out Leonard Cohen, take out Bob Dylan, because they're more troubadour types.
Not one Beatle was 30 when they broke up, so
I know.
Bob Dylan's best albums before 30 as well. So anyway, do you think, with the Beatles one is one thing, the Eagles is another, the Smiths, the Police, Guns N' Roses, of course, is another good example, isn't it? I've forgotten. Have they even come back again?
They completely forget. They tend to come back, and there's a big hullabaloo for the first world tour, and then they do. This is like the Pixies, who are still going. I mean, they reformed for the first time about 20 years ago, and they're still going. But the attention sort of goes away because it's not a novel thing anymore. But just talking about Talking Heads, the problem with one of the reasons why that will never happen, and this probably goes for the Smiths, who I don't see reforming, Oasis probably will, is that people bring out books, like Johnny Marr and Morrissey have brought out books. Tina Weymouth from the band brought out a book, which was very unflattering about David Byrne. And once that happens, really, there's no way back. And it looks very bad from an audience point of view. You're sort of thinking, oh, hold on a second. I was reading your book 5 years ago and you said you actually hated the man and you would never want to be in the same room
funny
as
you
again.
Should say that.
But now you're charging me €100 to watch you, the two of you, play together.
It's a band who started we heard them first kind of around 1990 and they've been going for 30 years and they're good old-fashioned rock and roll from America. And yet for the last 20 years, the two brothers in the band hate each other so much. It's unbelievable. And yet they're coming back to play in October 3 Arena. And that's the Black Crowes. I'll be talking to them on the programme tomorrow. But there's one here that says, I would sell my firstborn to see Talking Heads live, as long as it was their old stuff, says Catherine. That kind of
Yeah, I agree totally with that.
And here's another one just probably saying, well, hold on a second now. It says, Daft Punk live show in 2007 was the most amazing show I've ever seen. That's Gerard in Cork. So from 2007. Okay, so the new, just finally, like, you know, the new fans of these bands who weren't around when they were in their heyday, younger people into Talking Heads, there we go, you know, David Byrne Show, 3 Arena, you know, for many as mind-blowing as Stop Making Sense, wasn't it?
I wouldn't say so, no. Stop Making Sense is iconic.
Yeah, well, I would agree, actually.
But there's a more general point here if we're talking about, say, for example, the Eagles are Talking Heads. There's a time and a place to see a band. Talking Heads, if you saw them live on touring their third album, that was probably, you know, seeing a band on the way up, all cylinders firing, when they have the world sense of defiance and confidence, is such a rare and beautiful thing. Can you imagine seeing The Clash in Bond's Casino in New York when they did 14 nights in a row? They were promoting London Calling.
That's really
that
weird
was the
to
time
say
to see them.
I was just about to say my favourite gig of all time was The Clash doing London Calling, which was at the Top Hat in Dunleary, which is now a block
fantastic. Fantastic. And there was a time and a place to see Oasis. There was a time and a place to see the Stone Roses. It wasn't in the Phoenix Park when they're in their 40s and going through contractual obligations on stage. But Talking Heads, if they reform tomorrow, I'd be first in the queue. But there was a time and a place to see them.
Yeah, so long as they play their old stuff, as that last text says, and I kind of half agree with that.
They only have old stuff.
Yeah, but it kind of got but the last few albums and all that weren't necessarily great. What was I going to say? What about the likes of LCD Sound System then? They called it quits, then 5 years later they released
that was very cynical, saying to people, it's the last chance you'll ever get to see us in Madison Square Gardens, and then going 5 years later, going, hi, we're back again. It's very reminiscent of Queen when Freddie Mercury died, where, you know, Brian May and Roger Taylor were going, nobody could ever replace Freddie. By the way, if you met Paul Rogers, we're playing the O2 next week.
Yeah.
So it's very, very cynical.
Yeah, well, I'd be a bit of a fan of Paul Rogers, so I wouldn't be against that.
Would you?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, okay. He was fantastic.
Free, yes. Yeah,
what a voice. So then, like, do you think then Daft Punk will reverse the decision at some point? Do you think it'll be a disaster?
No, I think they're way too cool. They're way too cool for that. I think it'll be the same as R.E.M. And R.E.M. are another band who've been offered gazillions to reform. Can you imagine R.E.M. headlining Glastonbury, headlining Electric Picnic? They could clean up. But I think there's a sense of integrity about R.E.M. and a sense of integrity about Daft Punk that other bands just don't have.
All right, well, listen, Brian Boyd, thanks a million, Brian, for talking to us on the programme today. Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.